But after all the people that came and left at Atos and watching people succeed or struggle, it wasn't ever as much like, oh, that just wasn't the environment or the place or whatever for them. That might have been what they said, but actually, it was the same environment for all these other people that I saw take it upon themselves to make it happen, and they made it happen. That type of accountability and just overall, like, go get it mentality is the difference to me. That is the main factor that will determine your success. If you have that, you'll know what to give yourself or what, how to take each situation given to you and how to turn it into something positive.
Welcome to Forever White Belt. I'm your host, Adolfo Fronda. Today on the show, we have friend of the show, again for the second time, Michael Laguerra Jr. Michael is a black belt under Professor Andre Galval, second degree, I believe. He is also the owner of Logos Jiu-Jitsu in Denver, Colorado. Fantastic 7,000 square foot facility. He has built that place up from nothing during the lockdowns of all things. And it's incredible. He's got quite the squad now of competitors. And he's just an all-around great guy. He's quite the enigma too, because he's one of these guys that has one foot in the traditional realm and then another foot in modern day jiu-jitsu philosophy, keeping on top of what's new and current. He has a very interesting perspective and he's been through it all. He's a seasoned competitor. He's still doing it too. And coaching now this new crop of killers. We get into a lot of it, just all his experience looking back on the old days and what's currently happening in his perspective now. He's got a lot of interesting things coming up. Anyways, we're going to leave in the show. I hope you enjoy it. Don't forget out there to like and subscribe. Also, check out our merchandise. We've got hats, coffee mugs, shirts, sweatshirts, etc. at teespring.com/forever-white-belt. Thanks so much. Enjoy the show, everyone. Michael, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I'm so glad to have you back. Last time we spoke was in 2021 and way back on episode 16. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being an early guest on the show, taking a chance on a nobody, a no name at the time. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm nothing special. Thank you for having me. Always happy to talk about jiu-jitsu, you know.
Last time we spoke, you're what, a year or two into Logos, your academy in Colorado. You told me you laid down mats, I believe it was in November of 2019. Completely insane timing. Somehow you survived through this thing, which we spoke about in the other episode, which I highly recommend people go back and listen to. So it's 2024 now. You have this beautiful, what looks like 7,000 square foot academy called Logos in the Rhino District of Denver, Colorado. How's that going?
Oh, beautifully. I'm grateful every day. The gym is growing every day. Thinking back to those times, like, it seems just like yesterday, but also going through each memory kind of reminds me how much we've been through. At this point, same format where I'm in there 7 days a week teaching, and now I have a little bit more support helping me. Some sessions we're running two classes at once. I would say the main difference, all the normal things that any jiu-jitsu academy growing kind of goes through, but main difference is, like, when I first got here and opened up and we started our sessions, it would be mostly the room would consist mostly of people who had already previously trained. It would probably be like at least, like, I'm talking bare minimum 80%. So if there was 20 people to 30 or 40 people in the room, I would say less than 10, less than eight, even most of the time, would be white belts that started with me.
I remember during the lockdown, you were telling me you had like 50 students in the lockdowns, and you're like, we had to survive with like 50 students, and somehow we did, and which is remarkable.
Yeah. And now, if we were to look at any of the sessions, it's probably 50-50 of people that came to Logos with experience and people that came to start jiu-jitsu practice at Logos. So that type of split, that type of difference in student is always cool to work with. It's always cool to work with someone new. It's cool to see work with someone who's already been training.
That's amazing, especially given that I didn't realize this from our first conversation that you don't have a kids program at that particular academy, and to be able to grow that much, because people don't understand how much. And I was just speaking to another individual named J-Jack in the Upper East Coast, and he runs an academy called The Academy. He doesn't have a kids program as well. And I told him, wow, you are leaving a lot of money on the table. And he just chooses not to, which I totally respect. But I don't think people really understand what a bulk of revenue, and even like sometimes their parents will join too as well. Now, I understand you got something coming up with your sister, but can you talk to your decision to go, I believe it's 16 and up at Logos, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess just starting with the concept of like coaching or teaching or creating a space for any type of jiu-jitsu practice or whatever the sport or martial art is, like there's a huge amount of responsibility on the side of the coach and the owner of the gym or whoever you want to look at it as, to provide and maintain that space. Like, you're going to coach jiu-jitsu, it's like on you to give them the best environment you can. You never want to not respect that. And I feel like with kids and adults, they're like two very different types of transactions between the coach or instructor and, you know, the student. And I just really wanted to make sure that I wanted to respect both of those greatly. Like, I didn't want to have a side part of what we do be teaching kids. I didn't want to do it for exactly what you're saying, the money, which is the money that comes with a kids program is just, it's a thing. But I just wanted to put more focus on, like, if I am going to do a kids program, they have their own space and something more dedicated and focused towards them. And the same for adults. Like, I didn't want an adult program to be in any way set to the side for the kids. And I just wanted to keep things separate if I could. And me personally, when we opened in January 2019, I hadn't been teaching kids for about 5 years, and I didn't have the energy to do so. Like, I was putting a lot into teaching adults at Atos, and if I'm not there with my energy, I didn't want to put up any type of half-effort program just for the money in any type of way. So these were all the things I was thinking with the initial decision to not have a kids program at the gym. And then, like you were saying, earlier last year, my little sister, Elizabeth Liera, who's a black belt, brown belt, Pan Am champion, and a black belt under Professor Andre, she moved out here, and we opened what started as a kids-only program in a separate building and opened it up to, like, a more family-oriented jiu-jitsu gym / affiliate. For, again, for those reasons, like, that place, we put all of our efforts and focus on creating this family environment for people. Everything down to the location, it being closer to a suburb, to where my HQ is actually in the city. We just tried, you know, something new, something fresh, with putting more focused efforts towards the people we were trying to attract into the gym. And it's been going well.
When I was talking to you initially about moving, you were like, you know, I was thinking about going to here in the Austin in one of these places or whatever you were talking about, thinking about. And in retrospect, what a fantastic decision, right? Austin is pretty saturated right now with jiu-jitsu, and some of these places have gotten like that. And when I hear people talk about Colorado, I hear about Logos now. You know, we had a friend of the show, Hunter Colvin, talking to us, and he speaks very highly of you, man.
Hunter's great.
Just super high respect for your instruction, and you were a big help, he said, to a lot of his training. What I'm finding too is it's, you seem to be like what I call sometimes the musician's musician. You know, a lot of people in jiu-jitsu, when they speak of you, someone like a Hunter, for instance, who is an elite competitor, seeks your guidance and praises you. Your thoughts on all that?
First of all, shout out to Hunter. He's great. I'm a big fan of Hunter. The short time that it was, like, I think about a year that we got to share the mats together, they were crucial, I think, to both of us. Like, it was great to kind of just share the space. I got plenty of time to kind of show him kind of how I see jiu-jitsu and what I do. And he was very receptive, came very often, pushed me a lot. And like I said, it was important for both of us in that time. Like, I needed that push. I was competing a little bit during that time. So to have someone like him who's showing up every day and grinding, it was great. And in terms of just working with other high-level jiu-jitsu practitioners, I know exactly what you mean of being a musician's musician. That's a compliment to me. You know, that's kind of what I strive for, is to be able to, or not exactly be the number one guy, but to be able to share the mats with anyone and make an impact, or at least just have good exchanges and be there making good memories, or whatever you want to call it. A big part of that is just, no matter who I'm on the mats with, I try to stay consistent with how I do things and not cater too much, but also be open to what they bring and what they need or what they want to do. Yeah, I miss training with them. It was cool.
You were telling me it's tough because, you know, I'm prepping for competition, things like this. Your reality was you just had a bunch of blue belts around you. You didn't have like the toughest training partners to work with, but you made it work. And now it's kind of beautiful to see how this flower has sort of bloomed in terms of logos. And I see all these upper belts now. I see some black belts. Can you tell me about that sort of evolution?
Yeah. You know, in the beginning of Logos, when I was training for competition, I had a lot of momentum coming from Atos, and overall I was in shape from training at Atos. And like I was saying, 80% of the room already, they had previous training experience. I had a lot of blue belts and purple belts already, and even black belts. When I started and opened the gym, I had like 6 or 7 black belts training at the gym already, which was cool. But now, fast forward, it's almost been 5 years. It's been 4.5 at this point. Now creating a more solid foundation underneath that of training partners who started with me is a completely different thing. It's very motivating and inspiring when I'm realizing that my training partners that are pushing me are also sometimes guys that started with me. And to be able to create that type of relationship where literally showing them everything they know, to now we're more formidable partners in these rounds, it's special. And it helps everyone. Like, the more strong that foundation is, all of the upper belts get a better push, and they get a better look every night as well. At this point, I have a hard time understanding what my focus is. I do so much with my jiu-jitsu practice that, like, every time I say, like, okay, I'm going to slow down and competing, I end up competing more. At this point, I feel like I'm always getting ready, and I don't even know what I'm getting ready for.
How are you spinning all of these plates and continue moving forward, you know, and keep your sanity?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, just the way that I had to put that down for sure. The way that my body and my mind and my spirit kind of move forward, I have to be doing everything together. I'm not the type of person that can put everything down so I can focus on business, or the type of person that can put everything down so I can focus on competing, or put everything down so I can focus on coaching or teaching. Everything has to build up together, or it's not for me. If I don't keep my progress in balance, I won't feel it. Like, I'll feel like I'm letting parts of myself down. So if I ever go out to compete, you'll also see me teaching more. You'll also see me working and hustling at the gym more. I'm starting to realize that out of myself. Like, this is all a part of me. It's not like I can put anything down at any point. I mean, as far as competing goes, that's like, in some ways it seems like it's the least important or least meaningful, and in some ways it seems like it's the most important, the most meaningful thing, and everything kind of revolves around it, or it just kind of revolves around everything else. Like, it all depends on what mode I'm in or which way I'm looking at things. And competition in 2022 was my slowest year. 2020, I competed a decent amount even with the lockdown. And 2021, I competed a decent amount. In 2022, I started to slow things down, and I felt everything slow down. So 2023, I was like, okay, I'm going to just stay active and have fun in the Masters divisions. And also in the ADCC Opens, I competed in 3 of those. And then all of that activity and stimulation for my competitive side got me back into it, and now I'm doing PANS this year and ADCC trials the next weekend. And I'm just going to see where it takes me. Like, this might be the last of the competitions this year, or it might just be the start. I really don't know, you know?
Yeah, you're a very sort of go with the flow kind of feels with sort of where the muse takes you kind of guy, it seems like.
I can't be any other way sometimes. Like, I have to feel it.
Let's talk about curriculum, or lack thereof. You were telling me that you were kind of trying to develop a curriculum and thinking about how that was going to evolve. And then lately I've heard you talk about no curriculum.
I mean, it's tough. If I could consistently teach the same 20 people that are starting from the same place, or at least I know the 20 people, and them come consistently 3, 4, 5 times a week, then it definitely would be a lot easier. But the way the gym kind of flows, and the way people come in, and the way they leave, and the way they take off, and basing it off of when people start, and what competitors are doing what during when, and also how I'm feeling on the day. Like sometimes, you know, I come in and I'm like, okay, past 3 weeks we've been working this, but today, for whatever reason, 2 minutes before class, I decide to change it all up. I don't know, it's all tough. Like, I definitely think that I could be more organized with my curriculum, like, so I could, like, more easily give it to someone. But I think if anyone trains with me and applies themselves really quickly, they start to get how I see things, and they can start answering their own questions from my perspective, almost, from any position. And for now, that's the way I'm running things. And it more so just kind of depends on the day, on the class. You know, I promise the class they'll get good work in. It's all interesting, though. I always listen to how anytime I talk to anybody that trains anywhere else, the first question I ask is what class format looks like and how training with me, what's the main difference. And it's interesting hearing the answers. It opens my eyes to what I'm missing and what I'm lacking. And I try to almost instantly address that to balance things out. But I don't know. I think like trying to curriculumize jiu-jitsu and make sure that you're encapsulating every, you know, aspect of it. It's like trying to catch this magic in a bottle where it's like, it's just too much. There's too many factors, and that's just with jiu-jitsu alone. Now I'll try to apply it to whatever students that are in front of you on whatever consistent basis that you teach. There's guys at the gym, it's kind of an inside joke, I guess. They call my jiu-jitsu curriculum. There's this one guy, Nate, who probably started this. He'll be talking about an experience he had competing, where he was like, oh yeah, and then I swept the guy and I just started hitting curriculum on him. Like, my jiu-jitsu, he calls it curriculum. He understands it as that, even though there is no actual tangible curriculum. So a few guys have joked about how we don't, but we do at the same time.
Have you heard of the ecological approach?
I think it's great. I use it a little bit when I'm teaching, but also I do a full spectrum of no resistant techniques. Like, if you were to like put everything on a spectrum of one side being warm up that is not jiu-jitsu, just athletic warm up, and then the other side is like sparring where it's like all out, and then somewhere in the middle, starting from warm up, the next thing is like no resistance technique, or maybe like whatever movements, maybe solo movements, and then no resistance technique, and then this ecological method is somewhere right about here, and then situational sparring, and then sparring. If you were to look at all of that on the spectrum, I try to use all of it. I never underappreciate any aspect of jiu-jitsu practice. Like, warming up with non-jiu-jitsu movements is still effective. Running in a circle to warm up, I use that time to set the space in my head for jiu-jitsu. Like, sometimes we need a jog in a circle just to get rid of the idea that we were just at work. It's a good time to set the intention for your practice. Some people see it as a waste of time, where like, I'm really getting to work in that 2 minutes of jogging. Like, sure, my body's warming up, but also mentally entering the arena of jiu-jitsu thought. And when we start doing front rolls, I want my whole body to touch the mat before I do it with any resistance. You know, before someone's driving my neck on the mat, I want it to have at least touched the mat once. And every time we do hip escapes, I'm imagining, like, well, this is my canvas to move backwards on. You know, it comes in different angles, and forward hip escapes and bear crawls. Like, I'm trying to open up the space in my body to move freely. And, you know, when we move it forward and we're looking at technique with no resistance, it's the same thing. Like, I'm entering this place not only just to remember steps, but also I'm trying to see how this fits in with the way I look at jiu-jitsu and the way that I understand jiu-jitsu, whether it be me teaching or somebody else. Like, even when I'm teaching myself, I'm still activating and stimulating my mind to try to understand further. And then moving into like putting up some resistance and moving through these like specific areas and trying to understand and work live. The ecological training methods are really strong because it's like something in between technique with no resistance and sparring that's necessary and needed.
I was talking to a guy named Michael Demko in one of my recent episodes, and he calls it continuous practice or deliberate practice, right? And it's similar to what you're explaining. He calls it a continuum, right? A timeline, basically. On one side being no resistance, the other side being full-on competition, almost like, you know, 100% resistance. And he also says you should work through that. But his argument is that the majority of your time should be in this sort of center area where it's like just enough resistance kind of thing, you know? So it's sort of this nebulous concept. And then I was also talking to Marvin Castile. He's a black belt, 10th Planet black belt. He actually, you know, we can call it warm-ups, traditional warm-ups, whatever, but really it's, you know, another way of describing it is movement. He actually has a movement class prior to his class where he encourages his students to do that. And to some extent, it's, you know, sure, it may not be shrimping up and down the mats, but yeah, you're doing the bear crawls, you're doing the whatever, the lizard crawls and all these type of movements. But I do think that movements are very sort of individualized depending on the person, right? Like, I think a middle-aged practitioner is going to need something different than a 16-year-old kid versus whatever it may be.
That's the hard part about teaching, you know, like you're trying to bring everyone along when there's one guy that's literally a white belt that's a little bit overweight and a black belt that's super athletic. And then there's a white belt that's super athletic and a black belt that's a little bit overweight. And, you know, you're trying to meet everything in the middle. And I think that's where like tradition, I'm a little bit more traditional.
You have that foot in the traditional and one foot in the modern. It's so interesting.
More people want to push and be modern. And I applaud it. I'm like super stoked that people are trying new things in jiu-jitsu. But like the more you try to push, the more you start to realize there's a reason why this is tradition. The idea of warm-up, technique, situational sparring is like the traditional way to run a jiu-jitsu class. And traditional warm-up, like front rolling, back rolling, hip escaping, forward hip escaping, and bear crawls, that's like the most average, like when you look at a class that has a wide spectrum, it's like, okay, you're kind of hitting a little bit for everybody, athletic to unathletic, you know, with little variations, sure. Yeah, they can all kind of do it and they can all kind of gain something out of it. And then technique, it's like, you know, you got to at some point look at a technique with no resistance. And situational sparring, you got to like do it with some resistance. And then sparring, okay, you got to do it freely. Each part of that warm up, you can start branching off and not doing the basic warm up, but doing some kind of movement. Or some kind of whatever warm-up. The technique, you can not just do 3 times each, but you can start mixing it up somehow. Situational, you can not only start from half guard, but start giving objectives and turning it game-like in this ecological method. Sparring, okay, now you can change it up, but still the like basic traditional template of what a jiu-jitsu practice is still there, and you can't abandon it. At the end of the day, it's like tried and tested and proven. You know, everybody we know for the most part has been at least in some way practicing in this type of form. I see the wisdom in doing traditional things. Like, I use that as a, like, I understand that as a tool to see into the past of how, like, we got here. That's my foot in tradition. And then my foot listening to everybody and what's going on in the scene is what kind of opens that up and broadens that up. So, like, I think both, you know, like, when I see whatever, an Instagram post that says you're wasting your time warming up, it's like, okay, every warm-up you go and do from now on, I'm going to be getting better and you're going to be wasting your time. just based off of perspective. Like, your perspective is holding you back because you see yourself as wasting time. To where if you were to just look at it in a different light, it would be getting you better. And like you said, I'm 1 foot in tradition and 1 foot looking forward and being modern. And that's my comfort zone.
I'm coming in through your doors, Logos, first time I've mustered up the courage to walk in. You spoke about like an intro onboarding class. What's my experience?
Some kind of movement and warm-up, some kind of technical focus where you learn some movements a little bit and some situational sparring. White belts and beginners, they get the most out of the ecological approach, like getting someone who's never done anything and just to give them some simple cues and let them feel things and not overcomplicate things for them. That's a great tool for them in the process of learning. Not only learning, because I think learning is like, it's not the right word for it, but like to just open themselves up to jiu-jitsu. In the beginning, you haven't even started, so it's like learning is almost out of the question. You need to just like get in there and start moving. So in that way, yeah, I think, you know, we try to show them a little bit, but also we try to let them feel it.
You would teach oftentimes two clashing concepts. Are you still doing that? And also, can you explain what that even is for the viewers and listeners out there?
I always try to give a lot of context into whatever we're working on. So that means if we're working something from the bottom, then you have to understand what the person on top is going for or trying to get full context of the situation. You need to understand the opposite perspective. I try to touch a little bit of everything. One lesson plan that I feel like is super effective is to start the class with one technique or one transition or whatever you want to call it from top or bottom, and then do the rest of the class almost against that. So like I'm saying, that builds like great context for you to try to understand the situation fully. It's something I still do often.
What's been interesting you lately, jiu-jitsu wise?
Lately, I've been cross-examining like all of the instructional platforms. Like for a while, I was going deep on one instructional at a time, like on BJJ Fanatics or wherever it may be. But right now, I'm like going across to like the websites, the platforms like AOJ Plus and Essential Online, and of course, Atos BJJ On Demand. And they're great if you're trying to specifically learn one thing. But going on these like platforms that do have their curriculums essentially on display, times two playback it's changing the game as far as how much you can go through. So lately I've just been like, I have all four of them up. Like I have every tab open, and whatever we're working, I'll literally just skim through each of their takes on it. And to some degree, like think about what my take is on it. And then also to some degree, let it be shifted by what I'm watching. There's like such good stuff on all of those websites for all different reasons. Like AOJ Plus is just so good at their style. Like their style is so specific in the way professors Hoffa and Guilherme do things. Like, you know, it doesn't really deviate from their style. And Essential Online is just so strong and fundamental, and I wouldn't use the word basic, but just like making things so simple and understandable. I really appreciate it. And then my favorite is Atos BJJ On Demand, because like there is no style. If you want to learn something from there, you're learning from four or five different styles. And like you have to like sit through a lot of content. And sometimes it's not as focused in a good way. Like I'll be watching one of Jonatus's or Andy or Professor Andre or Dom's videos, and like I'm trying to look at half guard passing or whatever it is, but I'm learning all this side stuff. Like they're so free on that platform to just rant. Like that space is like for them just to like go off essentially, and I love it.
And you have a lot of stuff on there too.
I do. I have about, I think, 75 videos on there. And I love like just going through it and picking up all these side details on things that, you know, I wasn't even there for. But now that's exactly what I'm there for, are the like side things I wasn't expecting. So yeah, I've been doing that a lot lately with all the competitions coming up. I'm doing PANS as an adult and ADCC trials. That in itself is very interesting to me, you know, just like where I'm at now is a really just peculiar place in my career. Like, I feel like my understanding of jiu-jitsu is greater than ever before. My physicalities as an athlete are in like a different place. Like, I'm not maybe not as fast or as specifically strong, but I still feel I'm just more focused athletically, which is like hard to explain. I feel like I'm in a good shape always, and somehow physically it just feels more positive, like my body and the way that I feel. And it's like the least amount of pressure. Like, I feel more free than ever before. And that combination is just interesting to me. Like, my results, whether they be good or bad, I'm interested to see where they take me. The expectations are like not there for me. I feel like I don't have that as much. I'm just there to see what happens.
When I was speaking to you the first time too, when you were reminiscing back on having to drive into comp class to Atos and the dread after a while, after doing it for so many times, and you're going to go into the wood chipper again, I was getting that feeling from you of like, you know, you're kind of tired of it in a way, and or just ready for the next step, you know, which was Logos. Now you're here and seeing your mindset, you seem like a completely different person. And you wonder, you know, it's good that you experienced what you did, but, you know, they're both different, very different. But the outcomes, you can argue what it was. You know, one was a very young Michael Eara Jr. And now you're in this seasoned, you can come back and sort of reflect on it all and you have a lot more wisdom. It's just a really interesting time to see your career and where we are in jiu-jitsu as a zeitgeist in general, right?
Yeah, for sure. It was tough training at Atos. Like you said, I'm super grateful for all my time spent out there. But jiu-jitsu is in an interesting place right now. I think it's really getting to the point where it's professionalizing. The organizations and the opportunities and the platforms for us to go and do our thing are more professional than they ever have been. But also the athletes are more professional than they ever been too. It's not as common anymore that someone start in their late teens, early 20s, and do much without committing literally everything or having some kind of background in athletic experience, especially wrestlers or whoever have started joining, which also is, I think, new. Like, I think the methods of training and getting better, if you do have the right body, mindset, and opportunity to give your time and commitment, like, you can get to a very high level in a short amount of time, but you do need all of those things. The generation of kids that have been taking it seriously from a super young age, you know, 5 years old and below, are going to actually become the dominant breed of the competition scene.
Yeah, everyone seems to be talking about the AOJ kids. They were very smart to invest heavily, heavily in their very young kids in a very professionalized manner. And they bloom some kids that are going to be just incredible, man. It was such a smart investment. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's incredible to see grow. I was there in the comp training when Tynan and Jonathan and all of them first stepped in as juveniles. Like juvenile one. So like to see them go from a kids program where they put all their efforts, which evolved into a juvenile program where they invited all of these Brazilian kids to come and train at AOJ, to where it's at now, where it's both like they've slimmed it down, their focus, but also it's grown, is incredible. Like, they're, without a doubt, when it comes to that, in that lane, there's not even anyone else there, you know? Maybe in Brazil, there's some, like, factories of jiu-jitsu phenoms, but, like, nobody that can, like, churn them over in the U.S. Like, so it's crazy. I mean, like, to me, AOJ, as a standalone jiu-jitsu academy, when it comes to building athletes up from kids up, they're like a little North Star for us to kind of follow. And then Atos, Professor Andre, is doing his work, is like just adjacent to that in the sense of like taking the squad that he has and being just so multidimensional in gi, no gi, and taking a smaller group of people, I feel, and being able to deploy them so many different avenues and them be at the top. And then Essential, I think, is like starting to build to be one of the top American-based jiu-jitsu academies, like JT, what he's doing on the East Coast. I think we'll be making serious moves in the competition scene. I'm close to them out there and seeing how tough their competition training sessions are. Every gym, like B team, what they're doing is cool, and being able to produce so much jiu-jitsu content that's like enjoyed by so many people and is so solid. Yeah, like everyone's kind of doing their own thing and in the limelight of jiu-jitsu culture, I guess, and competitions. And it's a good time to start. It's a good time to kick back and watch it all happen. I like keeping things way more low-key.
It seems like that. I was going to ask you, where's the Michael Liera Jr. content? That's not really your thing, huh?
I have some things in motion that are going to be in a little bit of a different way. I just always kind of move differently and more quiet and more awkwardly, I guess. But I don't feel as comfortable just broadcasting everything out or doing things in that way. But soon, I have some things in the works that I'm really excited about, actually. I'm working really closely directing some videos and trying to put more time in that space of being able to create content for jiu-jitsu that's not in the competitive space, like competition space. This year, I'm making a big push for it.
Sort of speaking to the aesthetic, the Michael Liera aesthetic, which is really cool. I mean, the logos design and everything is amazing. Your merch is fantastic. The logos merch, you guys got to check it out. The gis look great. The rash guards are awesome in shorts and everything I saw. It looks like an amplifier on the logos, maybe. And then you have one with like an old building.
That's our building. Just basic designs, a lot of the same stuff that we've been using, but just keeping it with exactly what you're talking about, 1 foot in the traditional sense and 1 foot in the modern sense. Like if you step in the gym, you can see it as being very traditional looking as a martial arts gym, or it can look modern because it's a minimalist or whatever it is. But that type of stuff is just whatever I see happening at the gym, whatever means anything to us, I try to push that out first. Like the speaker of the gym is very much the heart of the gym. It's like the energy that keeps us moving, and that's one of our main symbols. And also the building, that it's so cool, our little brick building in the middle of the city.
One thing too that I've noticed is seeing your band of, you know, brothers and sisters there are showing up to a lot of these tournaments. We're seeing Logos more and more as a team show up to these tournaments and performing really well. Can you talk about that evolution?
Yeah, my focus has always been on just going back into the gym. Like at the gym, going back to just providing for my students and whatever comes of that. And a lot of times, like in my head, picturing and envisioning what that would look like, I thought, you know, we would have less competitors and I would put more focus just on teaching and, you know, the practitioners in there, making sure that they have a good jiu-jitsu practice and whatnot. But naturally, like a bunch of people came in that wanted to compete more. And at first, they were going out on these trips to the IBJJF Opens, Pans, Worlds. And for the smaller Opens, you know, I would support them. But also in terms of like actually traveling out, I would be like, good luck out there. To leave the business to go to Tampa Open for the weekend or something is tough. But then eventually I just like, I wanted to be there for them more. And lately, as of this past year, I went to the Euros with some of my students. I always showed up at the Pans and the Worlds, or I tried to be at the bigger ones. But then we started going to like all these Opens, Oklahoma City Open, Dallas Open, Chicago Open. And we started having a lot of fun and sharing the B&B and the whole experience together. We started driving out to them. We were making like 10, 12, 16-hour drives out to these places. And even though it's a small group of people compared to the whole gym, it's a big morale boost for the whole academy when we have these little tactical squads go out there and do their thing. I start putting more time and investing more in them. With that, it just opens Pandora's box on the whole competing thing. And then it sucked me in and all the lessons that come with competing. Now having to share those with them. Just having fun with it every day. Like you said, just following the muse and seeing where it takes us.
Do you have advice to like academy owners? Because we talk to a lot of academy owners who are like, God, I wish I could get people to compete. And I got a feeling it's probably organic for you, but I don't know. Is there some sort of way or something? It just seems to have like really sprung up around you.
I think one thing that helps a lot is that we have a decent local tournament circuit. Like the Fight to Win promotion does an actual tournament for us, I think 4 or 5 times a year. And Grappling Industries is the same, like 4 or 5 times a year. So for like the practitioners at the gym that just want to get out there locally, they get a lot of chances to do so. And, you know, we have a whiteboard at the gym that people start signing their name on the board, which builds a lot of energy and excitement for these types of things. And then to go and compete nationally, internationally, whatever you want, wherever, whenever. I just got lucky with a good amount of guys that are willing and motivated to do so. We have a few guys that compete at, you know, these opens. I push them for sure. I try to explain to them the value of competing and competing often, specifically. Like if you're going to compete, you have to compete often. And yeah, we have a handful of guys that'll do 6 or 7 or sometimes even more trips to go compete, which isn't easy. It's not cheap. It's not easy flying out and putting all this time and money and effort and losing first match. But to have the resilience to like come back, train, and do it again is super admirable and respectable. It depends. It all depends on people's situation. Like if you don't have the student base that's there for that, you know, start locally. The thing is, even with us, there's, like I said, there's 8, let's say, tournaments between Fight to Win and Grappling Industries here. If I put the tournament on the board, if I literally talk to each person every day who I think might be interested in competing, after the 10th or 12th or 20th time I bring it up, they might put their name up. And if we do that for everyone, we show up to the tournament and we have 30 people competing. If I don't do that, we don't have anyone competing. So your ability to like sway their actions on these tournaments is definitely strong. Like if you're an instructor and you want people to compete, push them to compete. Don't accept when they say no that that is the final answer. You know, you have to keep bringing it up to everybody that goes to the training session every day. And once there's 2 people, there'll be 3. And once there's 3, there'll be 5. And once there's 5, you'll get to 7, which will get you to 10, 20. And then all of a sudden you show up to a tournament and there's 20 people. Now, if you don't put that same effort in on the next tournament, you won't have that 20. You have to restart the process. And it's not just me. I would say it's like mostly not me. I have a few guys at the gym that have taught me this because they do it. I help, but they're super big on like, hey, let's go compete this date 6 weeks ahead. And they've gotten big numbers. We've won team tournaments, you know, which has been super cool. Like it's like one of the best moments as a gym where we show up to a tournament and leave with the team trophy, or the Monday after the tournament presenting the team trophy. So it's cool. Yeah, it's definitely worth it.
Can you tell me an aha moment that just comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I have these aha moments all the time. Like that right there could be an aha moment. You know, seeing my guys encourage people to compete and it working, I was like, whoa, that's a thing, you know? It was an aha moment going back a couple minutes ago when I said you have to compete often. It was an aha moment watching my competitors who, when I first either started working with them, at whatever point when I saw them and I understood their potential to be what it was, like let's say their potential is X, and they go to compete, and then they go to compete again a month later, and realizing that their potential is growing. I thought that with competition, with training, their potential had a ceiling. The idea of potential was like, that is the ceiling. Your potential is this. But to see their potential morph and change just based off of experiences, whatever they may be, competing a huge one, it just gave more validity to the common saying that anything is possible. Like when potential itself can be changed, a lot is possible. Your potential that you understand as of right now is based off of what you're doing right now. It's based off of what your routine and what your exposure to whatever environments are and what you know right now. But if you change that up and all of a sudden decide, the next 2 months, I'm doing 4 competitions, and apply yourself actually, like you can't just go through it, but actually apply yourself to that experience, you'll see your own potential grow and change. And that's insane. Before I saw like, oh, okay, this person has high potential. But now I see it as like, this person has high potential now. What would happen if we expose them to these types of things? We don't even know. We can only imagine at this point. So like that was a huge thing for me. And now I feel like I've always seen that for myself too. Like I've always understood that for competing for myself. I don't know why I wouldn't put more, I guess, faith and belief in that concept in general. But yeah, don't accept the ideas of your potential to be permanent or solid. Now I try to use that concept as a tool all the time to motivate people.
I talked to an individual recently who, you know, has trained with Danaher a few times, and they were prepping for like competitions and things like that. And what he witnessed was, you know, everyone's used to the competition classes being, well, in the past, maybe being very hardcore, 100% grind, super hard rounds all the time. And with Danaher's, he was shocked that it was quite the opposite. You know, it was more flowy kind of in a way. They weren't going really hard. Your thoughts on comp training?
It all kind of depends. Like, one thing to take into account is volume. Again, going back, opening up another spectrum of like, should your competition training be easy or hard? I think appreciate each aspect of that spectrum. There should be parts that are very hard. There should be parts that are easier. Don't throw out the easy and just go hard. Make sure that you're getting your rounds in that are more intense. Make sure you're getting your reps in where you can more openly explore. When these guys, Danaher's students or team, they get so much volume in that there's no way it can be all hard. But also, I promise you that there are rounds where they are super intense. There's definite time and place for more intense training. I'm always all about keeping the balance in things. The second you give up easy training, easier, flowier, more, you know, explorative rounds where you're trying to understand and learn and move, you're missing out on something. And anytime you give up where you're going hard and not fighting to the death, you're also giving up on something. You're missing out on something. So in my training, I try to get a fair balance. And I pay attention to the schedule, where how close am I to a tournament? Where am I at and trying to understand something? What am I trying to do with each session? Am I trying to push myself, or am I trying to learn to put or push myself in more of a learning way? It should all kind of be taken into consideration. In general, one thing that people need to be careful of is, okay, you hear somebody that's really good is doing something some type of way. Have they always been doing it that way? Or are they doing it that way because that's where they're at now? I see people fall into these traps of like, I only train like this now. Like now that you're super good. But what about those years that you put all that pressure on yourself? That's a huge part of why you have the tools and the understanding that you do now, is because you put that pressure on yourself during whatever formative years in your career that you came up in. Comparing yourself and your process to someone else, you have to, at the end of the day, we all have to look at what we're doing and pick apart, like, oh, I could use some more of that, or I've been doing this too much, I need to refresh things. But also, it's a martial arts in general, jiu-jitsu is the same, like, it's a personal journey, and you have to have the accountability to add and subtract whatever it is that you actually need. You have to take charge. Okay, any champion that I've seen, the one common trait or quality between all of them is just how much accountability they all had to like take it upon themselves to get it done. Like when I first started training at Atos and the Mendez bros started their camps there because they moved to California, but AOJ wasn't a thing yet. I was looking around the weeks before they came and looking at like, what if they come out here and the training just isn't like what they need? Like Andre's doing this, but like Andre's kind of crazy. Like, he can get it done anywhere. And like, you know, this is great for me because this is all so high level compared to where I'm at. This is perfect. But the Mendez bros, like, they're smaller or whatever it is. And they landed and I realized, oh, they're going to get it all done themselves. Sure, they need training partners, but beside that, they're getting it done. It has nothing to do with what kind of training you put in front of them. They're getting it done. That was the first time that I had that realization. But after all the people that came and left at Atos and watching people succeed or struggle, it wasn't ever as much like, oh, that just wasn't the environment or the place or whatever for them. That might have been what they said, but actually, it was the same environment for all these other people that I saw take it upon themselves to make it happen, and they made it happen. That type of accountability and just overall, like, go get it mentality is the difference to me. That is the main factor that will determine your success. If you have that, you'll know what to give yourself or how to take each situation given to you and how to turn it into something positive.
So, Michael, where can the listeners and viewers get more information about you and everything you're up to?
So first off, you can always see me in Denver, Colorado at Logos Jiu-Jitsu Academy. Send me a message to make sure, but I'm there for the most part 7 days a week. On top of that, you can check me out on Instagram at Liera Jr., LIERAJR, which is my main Instagram, but also I have at De La Liera, DELA Liera, LIERA, that I've been posting some of my videos on, some of the stuff that I'm working on. But other than that, come see me. I'm always welcome to anyone that wants to stop by and train. Thank you for having me. This was great, Adolfo, as always.
Oh, yeah, 100%. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for watching and listening out there. Remember, give us the nice reviews and everything. Buy our merchandise. Become a VIP member. It's only $1 a month. Come on, people. Michael, man, what an honor to talk to you again. Let's do it sooner than later. Hopefully shorter than a year. Can't wait to talk about your future endeavors, your video project that you're going to be releasing and everything, man.
Likewise. I'm not getting any younger. Let's do it again.
All right, everyone. See you guys next time. Thanks so much.